area, basically what you get is significantly less bacterial infections, which means significantly less hospital room visits. You give people more opportunity to ultimately achieve sobriety if that's their goal. You give.
What about drug users flocking to these areas? As we know, according to Takeover Santa Cruz, they flock to Santa Cruz because of the wonderful lack of service. I mean, the wonderful services at the Homeless Lack of Services Center, because of the druggy climate, because of the anything goes, keep Santa Cruz weird climate. Isn't that been encouraged by these kinds of inhalation and injection centers?
I think there's three reasons why people come to why homeless might gravitate towards Santa Cruz, right? Number one, the weather. It's beautiful, and it's a beautiful place to live. Just the same reason we all want to live here is the same reason that a homeless person might want to live here. Two, there is an availability of drugs here in Santa Cruz, okay?
You think that is one of the reasons people come to Santa Cruz?
Sure.
For the drugs?
I think there's an availability of drugs here that you might not get in other places like Boise, Idaho.
Well, what about, let's say, as compared with, I don't know, San Luis Obispo, Palo Alto, San Jose, San Francisco?
I think there's a higher availability of drugs here. That's my opinion. That's not research. The third reason is that when you have an established population. Okay, so why did we have at the turn of the century, you know, little Italy, little Poland, little Russia, Jewish communities? Because people will gravitate towards people that they feel comfortable with, and because there's already an existing homeless population here, people will come to a place like this because they feel that there's a level of camaraderie or comfort with like-minded, like persons. We gravitate towards that. So I think that I don't believe that it's the massive amount of homeless services that are available in Santa Cruz that has anything to do with the homeless coming here, or this being a homeless quote-unquote magnet. It's a nice place to live.
It's a beautiful place to live in many ways.
And, we dehumanize the homeless persons to the extent that we don't even acknowledge the fact that they appreciate beauty on the same level that we appreciate beauty. So this dehumanization, I mean, why wouldn't you live in Santa Cruz? It's beautiful. The people are kind, well, for the most part. There's a lot to do here. You've got the ocean, you've got the mountains, all the same things. We act like a homeless person isn't going to have any of those experiences, that they're not going to appreciate a sunset, right? Or a beautiful sunny day, or even a rainy day. And so I just think that we pretend that there's some sort of robotic nature to the homeless person.
Well, the next statement that always follows this, or that can follow this, is it costs money to live in Santa Cruz. So you get these people coming to Santa Cruz. They don't have any money. They think they can just live off of all this free shit that is being thrown out by crazy liberals who just want to, you know, this is dumb compassion. We've got to be smartly compassionate.
Well, where do you think the salaries for the Homeless Services Center employees come from? Where do you think that comes from? Besides a small percentage is private donations.
It is squeezed from the hands of taxpayers by misguided liberal city council members.
And where do these taxpayers live?
Well, the taxpayers, of course, are here in Santa Cruz, and that's one of the sad things faced with.
And where else?
Well, in the county, perhaps.
And where else?
Well, what's your point?
The point is that... most of the money that comes into HSC comes through Sacramento, right?
So they're funding the drug-dealing Homeless Lack of Services Center through Sacramento? Is that what you're saying?
The federal government and the state government are dumping money into Santa Cruz, and people forget that piece, right? Where do you think HUD comes from? HUD's a federal program, right? So if the Reveille Family Center gets money from HUD, we're getting money from all over the United States being funneled into the community, right?
Oh, I agree with you. And switching from my role as a, shall we say, caricatured right-wing ideologue, and I really should have somebody on this in the studio who is an intelligent, impassioned, and sincere individual who has these beliefs that I think are not beliefs I share. In fact, they're bullshit and bigoted beliefs, in my view, but who can honestly represent them, and I don't. So all you Take Back Santa Cruz people listening, please do call in, 427-3772. You can talk with Doug Loisel, and he has a team, a support team here that is willing to defend him. So don't be afraid of hurting his feelings. Don't be afraid of calling him out for the drug-dealing, sex-perverted junkie that he is. This is your opportunity, 427-3772. I myself will, mediate any disputes. Ethan Berman, if you're listening, get off your fucking high pedestal and come on, give us a call. We're waiting here on the air, 427-3772. And I've unfortunately found recently that I haven't been getting any calls. So we may be talking to a very select group of the most exclusive individuals, amounting to like 5 or 6 people. You never can tell. But we are being recorded on HuffSantaCruz.org in case you want to review these remarks later for prosecution, perhaps, or other, national security purposes. I got a couple things. If you've got something you want to say, why don't you have a thought you want to say?
Yeah, I do.
Go ahead.
Okay, so back to the economics of home.
You want to say it before we answer the call?
No, go ahead.
An actual phone call. Could this be D.A. Bob Lee calling in? Let's just find out, shall we? You are on Free Radio with Robert and Doug.
Robert, I just wanted to let you know that you are on the air. We are broadcasting with a magnificent 30 watts of effective radiated power.
Very nice, Uncle Dennis. Very nice.
Again, I hear you very clearly down here in the harbor.
Well, that's excellent.
So I think you have 6 listeners.
Well, that is a real boost in the arm. We'll be expecting to see you or hear you soon.
See you in a while, Robert. Bye.
Bye-bye. And, of course, Uncle Dennis is the talk show host for From the Cream to the Dregs, which follows this show in 29 minutes. So you can hear all kinds of archaic music if you tune into his show. You are on Free Radio, and thank you for calling in. I'm Robert, and Doug is very well dressed. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm glad you're well dressed. You know, I've been sort of fantasizing what you might look like.
Are you over the age of 18? I want to know that right now.
I am kind of a 70-year-old teenager.
Well, that's called robbing the grave rather than robbing the cradle, I guess.
Yeah, right, exactly. But I got 1 foot on each, and I'm doing a real good cha-cha.
All right, well, you may then present your protestations and your qualifications and possibly, your affections to Doug.
I think that, we really have a hard time not getting negative when we deal with these issues that a reality present to us. But we do need to, see the light side as often as possible, and we need to get a lot more work done. We all need to work together, put our differences beside ourselves, and make this democracy come to life and come to respond to being a human democracy. This is ridiculous. And I know we can do it. I think the revolution is on. I think your guest is one of the greatest persons I've heard on your show ever. Talk to you real soon.
All right. Well, I hope he doesn't outshine me. I mean, that would be rather embarrassing.
That's not possible.
I suppose not.
He just turned my mic off.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was turning it. Well, that comes next if you don't watch your step. So I'm actually I know that you've been here for a while. Looks like we're going to lose some of our silent supporters here, which may give all you right-wingers and some of you left-wingers a chance to give a call in. Still have a chance, 427-3772, if you want to give a shout-out. If you're on the radio, if we're on the radio, and if you like what you hear, if you don't like what you hear, if you have some information to contribute to what you hear, I want to thank our two silent spectators for leaving. No, I mean for staying. As long as they did. Well, next time we're going to want more information. All right. So, we'll work on it. Thank you.
I'll come back on Monday.
All right. So, so we lost some people, but you know, we lost in people, we gained in unused space. I guess that's the value of keeping vacant buildings around while homeless people are freezing outside in the cold. I mean, you don't want to damage valuable property. Yeah, but that is a real, I think, a good concern. Anyway, I want to make a few announcements, and Doug, I want to get your reactions to some of this stuff. So what I'm going to do now is turn you into a co-host, which is a convenient way of sidelining you after you've finished what you want to say, of course.
Sure.
That means you get a chance to kind of weigh in on whatever I'm talking about, but I kind of rush through some stuff that I normally do. But go ahead with your thoughts first.
No, I just I appreciate what the last caller had said. And Tocqueville said that freedom and equality can never coexist. And, you know, I disagree with that. Freedom and equality can coexist. And one of the things that really bothers me is that this idea that business, that we can't have a robust business community and a robust homeless community, that those are mutually exclusive.
Well, let's see if this caller agrees with you. Hi, caller. You're on Free Radio.
Hi. Sure.
Hello? Turn down your radio or else you will be catching a delay. Turn down your radio or turn down your computer. Are you there?
Hello?
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 Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, so what are your thoughts there, caller?
Can you hear me now, Robert?
I can.
This is Patrick Lancelin.
Oh, Patrick, how are you doing?
I do not want to be interrupted.
Well, go ahead. We'll try not to. I can't promise anything, but please, go ahead.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'll just do it my way. Let's do it this way. Everyone can tune in to a website that I'm going to put up in 10 minutes.
Okay.
And we can hear it from the back 40. Really, I've been looking at these videos here of you and the rest of this saga, and you know, folks, we can do better, but it's gone on long enough. This is ridiculous that it should come to this. I hope that the people that are there talking with you do something new. But I'm going to go ahead and put that up with Daryl Darling defending himself about the trailers and the rest of it. I just tuned in a little bit, and I couldn't handle it. I'd shut it off, turn it back on a little bit to listen, and I'm just going to do it this way, and I'm going to go. So I want to say good luck to the people of Santa Cruz down there. I know you're having a hard time. Stay warm, and you can do better, but you got to step up and do it yourself because nobody's going to help. But I'm thankful that something different may come of it. Thank you.
Appreciate that, Patrick, and feel free to call back, too. Patrick Lancelin is a video journalist who has been around for a long time. He was here also for the Occupy Santa Cruz movement, and I'll be curious to see what he has to post. Patrick, if you can send me an email at rnorris3@hotmail, I can pass on the word as to where you, I'm sure you can too, as to what you've posted and where it is. And thanks for calalling in spite of your feelings about my style here. And I appreciate your passing on your information. In the studio with me is Doug Loisel, executive director for a time of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. I wanted to kind of run through a few things that have happened, at least emails I've gotten, sort of bits and snatches of information that I often bring up. Usually I play people giving me interviews, giving me information from the streets, and I don't really have time to do that. I've got about 22 minutes left in the show, and I'll be playing more of that on Sunday starting at 9:30 in the morning. I will be also having a special guest, Civonomics co-founder Robert, and what the hell is his last name? I'm sorry, Robert, my apologies. It's another Robert, it isn't me. I won't be talking to myself as I usually do. He has created this process which I was sharply critical of as being some sort of kiss-ass, Mayor Bryant-loving let's all be civil while the city council takes away our civil rights approach to things. And he's pointed out that that's not how he's his objective. That's not his process. He thinks I'm misrepresenting and mischaracterizing with what he calls civonomics, I believe, and it's been, you know, highlighted in the Good Times this week, I think, and highlighted in the Metro. And I, what civonomics is it's a procedure online for putting up issues and then having people vote on them, and it's a or and have dialogue and discussion about them, which is certainly a good thing. What I didn't like was his approach, where he started by saying that he'd seen the angry crowd reaction to city council's sidewalk shrinkage ordinances that they passed last month to essentially make street performing almost a discretionary police matter, instead of, you know, acknowledging that people have rights to perform on the streets and to vend on the streets and to put up political tables on the streets. And he blamed the activists in the audience for being uncivil, and that was why the city council didn't adopt a more reasonable proposal. I think he's completely naive, or I don't think he's disingenuous. I've talked to him. I don't think he's being deceptive or has some axe to grind. I think he has this naive belief that many people do when they first come into the political scene, that all we need to do is be sincere, argue reasonably with folks, and we will get a reasonable response. And unfortunately, power doesn't work that way. It just really does not. Do you disagree with me, Doug Loisel, or do you feel that if we only argue reasonably enough, the politicians will hear us?
I think going back to your statement about power, there was a gentleman by the name of Willard Waller, and he came up with the idea of the principle of least interest. And his premise was that whoever is most interested in continuing the relationship has the least power. And so I don't know how that plays into, you know, kind of your philosophy or your idea here, but whoever loves the most in a relationship has the least power. Whoever is most interested in continuing the relationship has the least
power. I think that has more to do with personal relationships than political relationships, because a political relationship is certainly a real thing, as a personal relationship is, but when you're talking about a political objective, it may not be directly related at all to the relationship between the people involved. So, you know, I mean, you know, the real, I do point out to people like Brent Adams and the Sanctuary Camp people that you must, or Steve Plaich, when he wants to end the sleeping banner, says he does in his campaign, that before you even begin to approach people in power with this, although there's nothing wrong with, you know, I suppose, doing so, you have to have power yourself, by the which I mean a constituency. You need to have, or the threat of something that's real. I mean, if you're a, you know, if you're a revolutionary fighter, it's a threat of arms. If you're, you know, a Gandhian person, it's the threat of mass movement, salt, you know, walking to the sea and, you know, disruption, mass disruptions. You have to have equal power. And it's not really a function of the relationship between you and the people you're talking to. It's a function of how much power you have when you come into that situation. And that's not really, and I think it may well be true once you're in that situation that the person, the other side, saying that you have power, may want to keep you talking rather than acting, and so they may have more of a stake in keeping you. I don't know, but I don't know how terribly relevant that is. What's relevant to me? Go ahead.
What one of the factors in civil dialogue is conscience, and so if I believe that I'm going to have a civil dialogue with you, and that you are going to respond to that civil dialogue in a civil fashion back, my assumption has to be that you have a well-developed conscience. The problem with conscience and the problem with having a civil dialogue is fear. And when people get into a position where they feel fearful, which is really my opinion about the Santa Cruz community and homelessness, it is very fear-driven. And that fear-drivenness creates a situation where civil dialogue isn't necessarily going to bring about any change. You know, fear is such a fundamental motivating factor in people's lives that they'll do almost anything to avoid fear, or they'll assign their fear to some group or some thing. You know, remember when we were little kids and we got under the chairs because of the threat of nuclear annihilation.
Duck and cover. You
know? Yeah, duck and cover. How fearful that was.
I mean, I agree with you. The only thing, but my point is, I think, somewhat different one, which is that if you want to influence the people in power, who I don't think operate out of necessarily because they are afraid or because I think they operate because they've come to some conclusions. About, I think they want to stay in power. That's one of the reasons they operate. They may have a series of beliefs about what is good for the world or good for the country, or they may feel they have to cater to certain other powerful interests and financial lobbies and voter constituencies that do. But the idea that you're going to have a rational dialogue with them, regardless of the fear factor, is, I think, really illusory unless you have power behind you. Now, it could be the power of fear. I mean, for example, in the Revolutionary War in the United States, in the colonies, Sam Adams was a notorious terrorist. They tarred and feathered tax agents. They didn't just have rational dialogue. You don't have rational dialogue with colonial agents who are trying to rip you off. You know, you burn their houses, you tar and feather them, and you run them out of town, in essence saying, you know, we're not going to do this. This is wrong. We're not going to do this. After, I mean, you've attempted remonstrations. You've sent people to Parliament. But they still jail you and flog you and do all these other things, which is an institutional system of punishment that we have in this country for homeless people, but also for everybody in many ways, particularly people who abuse the drug laws, but also people who challenge people in power. I mean, there's a lot of that. So what I say to people who want to make changes, whether in the civonomics stuff, is the idea that if only you're civil enough, you're going to get somewhere. I think you're right, too, about the fear. That's another issue. It's not you have to persuade Take Back Santa Cruz people. You have to persuade the people in power, who, some of whom are Take Back Santa Cruz people, but more of whom are established, institutionally entrenched people who have similar views, but somewhat more muted, but just as toxic, that have been pushing the same shit for decades from a position of power masked by liberal hypocrisy. That's my concern. They claim to be concerned about homeless people. Don Lane's a typical example. He said nothing about the attack on homeless camps. He does nothing about the seizure of homeless property. He's been doing this for 25 years. He has been a politician. And we see the same process of transmogrification happening with Steve Plaich, who is turning more and more to the right, who has expelled people from his Citizens for a Better Santa Cruz, myself for one, John Colby, the individual with the elaborate stuff, for another. And I think he's also censored other people and then denied he did so. He did that to two other people. But, I mean, it's a temptation to pander to power. It's always a temptation. I have it all the time. I find myself muting my arguments if I'm going to be talking to people like, the mayor or any public official or the district attorney, when in fact these people should be given less respect, not more, because they're abusing their positions of power or because the very position of power itself is an abuse, given the way it's functioning. That tends to be how I feel about it. And it's really hard. How do you fight this? You know, how are we going to get warming stuff this winter? How are we going to get sanctuary care? How are you going to get, you know, injection inhalation program? How are we going to stop the criminalization of homeless people and, you know, the ID cards and the security gates and all this crap? Your point about, you know, hard talking to fears. The other point is, my point is talking to people in power who say, oh, what do you got to back you up, buddy? We don't, you know, oh, yes, very reasonable. Next speaker, please. You know, that's their approach because they have come to conclusions and they're in a position of power. They don't have to listen. I see the same thing with attorneys who are well-intended, who sell out their clients right and left as public defenders. And they will tell you, we're getting the best deal for you can. But in fact, if the public defenders wanted the best deal, they demand jury trials for every fucking person. And they don't.
Right.
Now we have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Rabble Rouser Robert and this guy Doug.
Hello? This guy Doug and Rabble. You guys should be a band or something. Hey, I'm enjoying the show. I'm over here in Fresno. This is DG Matter Embryo. I just wanted to say that I think that's maybe a part of the Gandhi philosophies that I wouldn't really agree with the I'm going to assemble power thing. It's kind of what I'm not trying to do. And it seems that apes the dominant paradigm and is not real thoughtful. like, why would we want to assemble power? That's exactly the fucked up conundrum that we're, the reason we're in this stupid conundrum in the first place. And what I'm trying to do is really kind of not assemble power and not interact that way with people. And I would 180 disagree with you. I think our personal relationships should be just like political relationships. I think that's where we get all, we overthink it and get all out of kilter in political matters because we try to make them different than personal and just everyday common sense. There's no reason to get that way. Like, you could have a person who is completely sensical in every other way and they get thinking about a political question and they just don't even know what they're doing anymore. They're totally out of their element. There's no reason for that.
Doug, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think I think I'm in agreement with you in that I was going to mention to Robert that, you know, when I mentioned the, you know, principle of least interest, I think that that not only is an interpersonal dynamic, but I think it's also a political dynamic. And I'm a believer in authority rather than power. With authority, you get the sense, when people use authority in relationships, either politically or interpersonally, the other person who they have actual power over realize that what they're asking for or what they're asking these persons to do is in ultimately in their best interest. And if a person acts in that capacity who has power, they no longer have power, they have authority. You can coerce somebody to do something, that's power. But if you can get somebody to do something because they realize that ultimately your concern is in their best interest, then you have authority. Authority is a long-term relationship stabilizing force. Power will just shift back and forth. And so I am a little bit in disagreement with Robert. It scares me to be in disagreement with Robert because, you know.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
I am very fearful. You know,
it's just a larger philosophical question, and almost any question you can think of is not, like, discussed enough. Part of the filter that I'm thinking, so it's good to just have the interchange, but part of the filter I'm thinking about it through is kind of like in the art, like, what is it? Like, the politics of it all seems kind of stagnated, and I think that's part of the point, not like that's lost on Robert or the meaning of this show, but these issues have been stagnated ever since I've been aware of them, in Santa Cruz particularly, and in most places actually, and I think it's fair to put out there for politics and civic life is really uncreative and like stagnated and stuff, and like I come from it a little more from the world of the arts, which just thrives on change and has something new all the time and is like intrinsically exciting and fresh, and like there's always something that's being built all the time. You know what I mean? And in politics and civic life, it's just rehashing, not only, but largely, way too much so, rehashing the same stuff and so stuck in a lack of change and stagnancy. Nothing else in nature is like that, everybody. You know what I mean? Nothing else. Only an insanely small and narrow, stupidly conceived human system could be that way. So let's, you know, let's not be that way anymore. That's you know, and I don't know exactly the ways to do that for politics. Politics and whatnot and activism, but it's way too stuck. You know, way too stuck. Like the whole Occupy experience really showed that. It was like an insular mass movement. Like, how can that be? Like, how can you be an insular, fractured mass movement that can't discuss that it's that way? I just don't really have time for that. Then we kind of, I think those of us who are more in the artistic world, then we just go back into our milieu, which is vibrant and thriving, and then in some ways let the connections dwindle down with the political world, and I think that's sad. I don't want that to be the way it ends up. But it's like, come on, guys. You know what I mean? Work with us here. Let's, you know, it needs to be a little vibrant, more vibrant on your side of the fence, I would say.
We're going to vibrate you. Something to say, Doug. Go ahead.
No, I like that. That was very interesting. I really like what you said. One of the issues or one of the problems that I have with power is that M. Scott Peck would say that the most destructive addiction in Western society is power.
What about television or chocolate? We won't get into that. I'm sorry.
Anyway.
Yes.
So I just think, you know, I tend to be kind of an anti-power person in that I see power as being destructive. Robert seems to think that, you know, power needs to be met with power or we need to...
Well, it depends on what you mean by power. See, that's, if I may intrude here...
I'll just interject.
Sure.
the most addictive and destructive, the most destructive addiction we have in our society is the addiction to coercive power.
Okay, well, that's all very well to say that, but when coercive power is operating to repress people in a very serious way, as happens frequently in the world, usually a counterforce arises. And, you know, it is true,
yep.
one can make
right.
different choices. I mean, and it doesn't mean, you know, some people think, well, if only I seize the, you know, the means of production, if only I, you know, if I were the king of the forest,
right.
dictatorship of the proletariat, whatever.
Right.
And I have sympathies with those, that kind of view to some extent. But I think I also recognize that that has within itself the seeds of its own destruction and to replicate what went on. But simply to say that is to simply support the status quo is the problem, in my view. In other words, while I agree with you, DJ Embryo, that I think, you know, there are all kinds of creative things that artists do, and your metaphors are very vibrant, you know, and I think very accurate and, you know, and very inspirational. It's, I guess, I have to see more of real metaphors that translate themselves into political change, to because there are many kinds of power, and I think the distinction of coercive power depends on what you're coercing someone to do. I mean, if you're coercing someone to stop them from killing someone else, rather, you know, whether you inspire them to stop someone else, you know, I mean that's nice if you can, but if it's done in a mechanical way, you know, I mean, if the camps are running,
well,
you have to stop the camps.
Let me play you a song about the lack of killing a person, and maybe it will convince you. I know. I know what you mean.
I'm not just being sarcastic. There are things that can do that. You know, I agree. There are.
Yes.
You know, but. In the meantime, there are crises. Of course, this crisis approach is something that's used on the right a lot to justify all kinds of shit. And we totally need
practical steps, and it can't be just staying in the realm of philosophy all the time. I mean, and not even necessarily mainly. I totally hear that. And a part of my point was like, what is it? Oh, more visionary thinking. Like, you know, like inject some Buckminster Fuller into the whole thing. You know, it's way too like less willing to just like try radically new things. And I know that's mainly the power structure. The authorities, but it's weird. You know what I mean? It's so odd that the majority of people aren't studying new ways of organizing all of society. Why? Because for like 100 years it's been clear that this way doesn't work and stuff, you know? So it's just odd that just for out of the joy and intellectual curiosity alone that most people wouldn't be kind of focused on that by now. It's fucking weird to me. It's odd. And we don't necessarily need to explain why per se, but I really think there's just a lack of visionary thinking. And some of that would entail maybe people finding ways to not even be dependent on employers anymore, either growing so much of their own food and living away from society, essentially, the cities that we have. Maybe it's going back to like a different way of life that isn't dependent on this enslavement that we have. We need just like radical ways, like strike out in totally new ways because we don't have that much to lose. Things are looking grim, and it's weird that people, there isn't that sense of urgency, you know, that you would think that there would be, and I don't know why not.
However, I have a sense of urgency because we have 2 minutes from Uncle Dennis bursting into the studio here.
Let me let you wrap up your show. Thanks so much for the show, Robert, and I'm sorry I didn't memorize your name, but it's good to talk to both
Doug
of you.
Loisel,
thanks for the show.
By the way, we will be expecting a full Fresno report on the next encounter with you, Mr. Philosopher.
It sounds good. Okay, very much aware. I'm going to be on a break from school like for the next 3 weeks soon,
and it'll
be better for me to call and give you reports at that time.
I want some non-coercive power reports, artistic if possible.
Hey, that sounds good.
All right.
That sounds good.
Thank you, DJ
Andrew.
Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you, everybody.
And also you, Doug Loisel, you are supposed to bring up the Carmel or the Monterey or the Salinas report, and all I get is a lot of highfalutin technical quotes from aphorisms from certain obscure philosophers or social scientists. You better get to work, Loisel. I mean, see what you can do.
I'm sorry. Well, once again, a failure.
You failed utterly. Actually, you've done a fine job. I appreciate it. I enjoyed your talk tonight, and I enjoyed my talk tonight. I always enjoy myself, or often. Sometimes I don't. I'll be back again on Sunday at 9:30. Doug is welcome to come in again to subject himself to this kind of abuse. Although we've run over the territory. Yeah. We may have to find some new ways to abuse you. I think you should volunteer to go into the Lack of Services Center as a client and see what happens. Could you disguise yourself? Could you carry it off?
Yeah, I would love to do that.
That would be interesting to see.
Yeah, it would be very interesting.
Because you'd have...